Body Mind Spirit Radio is proud to present, live from the Wandering Owl in Jackson, Michigan, Pagan Spirit Shamanic Life, the show to ask and get answers about your spiritual path, with your host, James Stovall. The call-in number is 646-378-0378.
Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday, March 12, 2014. Welcome to Pagan Spirit Shamanic Life on Body Mind Spirit Radio. I am really excited to have a great guest tonight, Jason Mankey. I have known Jason for quite a number of years, and he has only skyrocketed since then. He's become a very well-known blogger and writer, presenter at things like PantheaCon and Convocation, and so I'm really excited to have him on the show with me tonight. If you want to join me or Jason on the air, you have some questions for him, some of his controversial blog posts maybe, you can call 877-497-2931, and our call screener will get you online with us to talk to Jason. I'm going to ask you as well, while I have everybody on the air here, share the show with a friend. The only way that I can really grow as a program, we can reach more people, we can find people that are needing the input, that need to learn, and the best way to do that is to share the show. Tell a friend and help us grow a little bit. And I also ask you to check out our store, thewanderingowl.com. The Wandering Owl here in Jackson, Michigan, it's our store where we sell products and teach classes and that sort of thing. You know, it's a lot of fun here at The Wandering Owl, I have to admit. I had a couple classic moments last week. I've got a Twitter feed, and one of the things I put on the Twitter feed sometimes is a little category, a little tag that I call Overheard at the Owl. And I had two classic ones this last week. You'll love this. This woman and her son were in, and as the son's looking around the store of all these things that he can spot or spy, he sees full of little red candles, and he very seriously looks up at the mother and says, "Are these explosives?" I thought that was awesome. And then I don't know if anybody has never been to the Wandering Owl. We share a little doorway with a crepe shop next door. And one of those great moments came up a few days ago when two older women stepped up onto the porch, looked in both doorways, and I could hear them quite clearly as one says to the other, "What should we go into first, the crepe shop or the creepy shop?" I don't know. For some reason, that makes me kind of proud. I'm kind of proud to have that. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but those kinds of things are always so much fun. And, you know, if I get labeled the creepy shop around town, so be it. But I don't know. I just thought I'd share those. Those are great moments. You can find those moments on Twitter. I share those a lot, like I said. I think probably before I waste too much more of your time, let's see if we can get our guest on the air with us. Jason, are you there?
I'm here.
Oh, so good to have you joining with us. It's been a long time, I think, since we've had a chance to sit down and really gab. I'm trying to remember the fuzzy years of just beginning this whole pagan quest when you were doing the green spiral thing up in Lansing.
Oh, yeah, that was feels like a lifetime ago. I've been out on the West Coast for 3 years now.
Has it really been that long already?
Yeah, it just flies by.
That does. That does. Well, thanks for coming on the show with me tonight. I'm really excited to have you on because, like I said, you are really burst onto the scene, I think. Your stock keeps rising, so to speak. You have got a ton of followers on, what is it, Pathos is your main channel now?
Yeah, Pathos. Writing there is an honor, and it's probably the second or third biggest pagan blog site in the world. So, you know, just being there kind of attracts an audience.
Yeah, and, you know, and people, a lot of people probably know you from your various convention appearances. So that's an exciting thing as well.
Yeah, I've done a lot of festivals over the last 10 years, but I was running the numbers the other day. You know, if there are 2 million pagans in the country, like what are the percentages of pagans who actually go to festivals? It's so tiny. You reach a lot more people online.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I know I do. I have received several times very good feedback about your presentations, though, especially when you delve into the various historical aspects. I know I've had several people talk about how well-researched you are, so that's a good compliment, I think.
I actually like speaking much more than I like writing. I think it's more fun to speak. I like listening to an audience. I like having them interact with me. But there's only so many pagan festivals in the world, so if I want to share things, I'm almost forced to write about them. But blogging is kind of like presenting in some ways, because there is that immediate feedback. When you read a book or something, you know, you'd have to track the author down to write a question. I mean, it's a lot easier now than it used to be, but with a blog post, you know, you can fire away as soon as you're done. And people often do, and usually they're mad at me, but that's fine too.
Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes.
It's not really that bad. I think, you know, there's maybe a small percentage. But when somebody really disagrees with something, they can be very loud about it and very passionate about it, which is a good thing, and really go out of their way to share why they're upset with something.
So what do you find more rewarding, I guess, when you get positive feedback or negative, or which is harder or easier to deal with? Because I think sometimes,
you know, I tend
positive
to look at
feedback
it.
Can sometimes – oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say positive feedback, it seems like, sometimes can be – can sap your motivation sometimes a little bit in an odd sort of way.
You know, I tend to not look at it as positive or negative. I tend to look at it as how many page views did I get today? That way you're always putting a good spin on it, or at least you're figuring out what people like to read. You know, sometimes when something gets read a lot, I almost am embarrassed by it, because it's humbling and it's scary to have thousands of different pagans reading what you write, especially, you know, when they're really smart pagans. I mean, most pagans, I think, are pretty smart folks, but, you know, there are a lot of big names who read and comment on blogs, and it's sort of frightening when some of them do. Like, Patricia Keneally called me out once. You put Patricia Keneally, the author who was handfasted to Jim Morrison back in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's like, I think, the most infamous thing that's ever happened to me. My friends up here make fun of me quite a bit about it.
That had to be just a little intimidating.
You know, it was intimidating, and it was kind of flattering in some way just to know that she actually read what I wrote, even if she didn't agree with it in any sort of way.
Can I ask what the disagreement was?
There was a kind of a blog dispute. Maybe it was a year ago now. I think it was last spring. And people were talking about worshiping superheroes as gods and other sort of pop culture forms as gods or using them in ritual. And to me, it's never been about putting Batman or Spider-Man in a ritual, though I'm a huge geek and love all those things. To me, it's always been about putting rock stars in rituals. I mean, you already see it with Elvis to some degree. People leave prayer requests in the walls at Graceland or in the fence outside of his house. And to me, Jim Morrison was always sort of the natural, especially from a pagan perspective, just because the music of the Doors, to me, just feels pagan, even if the lyrics aren't necessarily explicitly so. My thought was, well, rock stars are really the next gods, you know, Jim Morrison, Kurt Cobain, those kind of things, because they can touch us in a way that I'm not sure that superhero comics can. You know, the music invokes all of these feelings and emotions and whatever else. And she got mad and she called me a fanboy and that I didn't understand Jim and that he would never have wanted such a thing. And, she'll be watching his soul from then on. I've been doing Jim Morrison rituals for, geez, I don't even want to say how long, but 15 years, I think, where we worship or honor Jim is probably a better word, honor instead of worship. Jim is the 20th century incarnation of Dionysus, and do rites and rituals in honor of Jim and Dionysus and Aphrodite and Ariadne, and she was kind of objecting to that.
Interesting. Do you get a lot of pushback on that ritual from other aspects of the pagan or Wiccan community as well, or has it been pretty well accepted mostly?
Oh, everyone loves it. People who go to it love it. I mean, it's a celebration of excess. I mean, there's a lot of making out. There's some drinking. There's some toasting. It's like such a bonding experience. When I haven't done it at a lot of festivals now in several years, because it's not for every festival, and I think people take it too far. I was at Pantheacon one year, the last year we did it there, and they rolled a girl out on a luggage cart. That's not healthy. That's not good. She was already four sheets to the wind when she came in, so I don't think it's fair to blame me or my ritual, but, you know, that's people taking it too far, and that's a shame. But I haven't done it there in 5 years, and I still run into people who have their Jim Morrison beads that I gave them 5 years ago, and, you know, are like, when are you going to do this again? And we love the Morrison ritual so much. It was one of our favorites. So
that's
mostly the reception's great.
Well, the reason I wonder is, you know, a lot of times when I first started getting into paganism and Wicca more heavily, a lot of the charge that was bandied about, a lot of the accusation that was pointed was that you were just a party pagan or plagan. And I was wondering if that ever gets in conflict, if you've ever had that label thrown at you.
I don't think I've ever been called that before. I think I had somebody call me a drunk once, which I was half flattered and half horrified by. But, I mean, I take my devotion to the gods seriously. I take my religion seriously. I take my faith seriously. I certainly take teaching and writing very seriously. So I haven't ever really been accused of that. I mean, there are people who don't like the ritual sometimes for whatever reason, but I haven't really had too many people call me a plagan. And I've known some over the years, you know, as long as you're kind of honest about it, that you're really more there for the parties than the rituals, I think it's fine. I mean, we do throw good parties. We pagans.
Yeah, that's for sure. There's been many a crazy bonfire I've been around. That's no lie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't blame people. When I lived in Lansing, when I was doing the Green Spiral thing, which was the student group at Michigan State, and then a little later, you know, we always had a few people who were a part of our group who really weren't pagans. They just liked the energy and the atmosphere, and they liked hanging out with us because we always seemed to have more fun than everybody else. And as long as none of them were interrupting what we were doing or were being unserious during a ritual or whatever, I thought it was completely fine. Not everybody is going to be the most serious pagan in the entire world. And I think sometimes that holds us back. I think there's this idea that if you're a pagan, especially if you're a witch or a Wiccan, that you have to become this third-degree priestess or priest, and that basically you're being trained to be clergy by going through all these steps. And that's really not for everybody. There are some people who just want to worship. You know, they just want the fellowship, and they want to commune with the gods, and that's really all they want to do, and that should be completely fine.
So it's the equivalent of people that just go to church when they have a special reason to, but are not training to be clergy, per se.
Right, right. I think from what I've seen is, you know, pagan religions are the only ones where I've seen so many people aspire to get to this high point, and I think that's great because, you know, you learn along the way and stuff, but I've seen sometimes a backlash. You know, people aren't serious or that pagan isn't serious because all they want to do is drum. You know, if that's how they get in touch with the gods, if that's what brings them closer to the earth, that's completely fine. They don't have to be a third-degree high priest. They can be a drummer, and that can be their thing. And if it works for them, that should be totally okay.
That's true. I suppose there is. I've had the conversation with others that a lot of times in our community, the support people tend to be looked over. You know, it's always the people that that are at the front, you know, that are leading the ritual,
yeah,
tend to get a lot of the attention. And the support people, the ones making the bread and picking up the lawn chairs, don't get nearly enough attention.
I think those are the people who are most important. I mean, you can't have a ritual without all of those things. Somebody has to set the table.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, in your own mind, what would you classify yourself as? Are you more on the leadership side, or are you more on the entertainment side?
Oh, I think it's a combination of both. Certainly, writing online, people are only going to read things basically to be entertained. Yeah, there's a bit of knowledge that has to be put there, too. People want to read things to learn things, but if the writing doesn't speak to them on some level, if it's not entertaining, they're not going to read it. I think with workshops especially, I have a reputation of being able to mix jokes and information in a pleasant way. I mean, I've argued over the, well, I haven't really argued, but I've said over the years that I love talking about the Horned God because I can throw out a lot of dick jokes in the middle of it. And that's kind of true, and people like that. They enjoy the humor in a presentation, but I like to think the information is really good. Here in the South Bay of Northern California near San Jose, you know, I was here for a year and a half, and then all of a sudden I had people asking me to run a local pagan group, and I lead a coven in my house. So there's some leadership that's been there, and that seems to be natural for me. I did the Green Spiral thing for a long time and other groups, so I always seem to be kind of in that role. But to be in that role as, you know, guru or anything like that, I mean, I'm okay reserving rooms, organizing things to some degree. But, I mean, I don't want to be some sort of leader where people hang on to someone's every word.
Yeah, that gets kind of scary.
I'm always really scared when somebody like calls me high priest or something, or like one of the girls in our group who's older than me by a little bit. She's like, you know, I think of you as a spiritual leader. And, I mean, that kind of thing scares me in some ways. I mean, I'm just a guy. I mean, I love my gods, and I think I write really good rituals and things. But, I mean, I don't think I have any great secrets or anything.
Now, you've been in the middle, or at least on the edges, of some of these really big blog controversies lately, the big threads that have been going through. I talked to Sean R. Knight about it a little bit last month. But, you know, there's these huge raging battles lately, it seems like, about hard polytheism versus soft polytheism, and now we're getting into the, as you said, the superhero debate was about a year ago, roughly, I don't know, 8 months or so ago, and now there's the big rage about Wiccanite privilege. Now, as a broad
right.
writer, someone with some level of influence, do you think this is healthy for the pagan community? Is this right where we should be, or is it just unfortunately going for some of those page views, do you think?
I think there's a couple different answers to it. I think that we're a young group. We're kind of a young, new religion. I mean, modern paganism is 70 years old, something like that. So we're young, and we're still sorting out a lot of ideas. If you look at the history of early, you know, religions in their early years, they try on lots of different clothes. There's lots of different splinter groups and stuff. Some of them survive, some don't. So we're kind of feeling our oats and figuring things out. And in this day and age, you can't just write a letter and then get a letter back. It's all online and it's all very public, and everybody wants to comment on it almost immediately. So I think it's natural. Sometimes it's healthy, sometimes it's not. But one of the things I think I've noticed over the last couple of years, especially writing online, is sometimes I think that we just really like to argue. And it makes me sad that oftentimes the most trafficked blog posts are arguments. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guilty of it. I have about five that I think fall into the argumentative category. I try very hard not to call anybody a name. If I disagree with somebody, I don't even link to their article, or say them by name, because a lot of these people are really smart. I just happen to disagree with what they write, and it's not personal by any means. But I think that we just sort of thrive on the argumentative nature of some of these blog posts. I think the Wiccanite privilege or Wiccanite privilege thing is an example of that. You know, there are people who are angry that Wiccans are sort of, or Wiccan-style ritual or whatever, is sort of the predominant go-to in most pagan circles. And I understand that. Wiccan and pagan should not necessarily be synonyms. There are many kinds of paganism, and I think most people are aware of that. And I think it's something that we can be conscious of. But at the same time, throwing all of this energy into just arguing about it doesn't solve the problem. We need to throw the energy into creating other rituals and other workshops and exposing people to things and not simply arguing about it. I don't think that really helps for the most part. And I don't particularly like the word Wiccanite or Wiccanite or whatever those words are. They're not how I identify myself. They're not how anyone I've ever met identifies themselves. And we seem to be spending a lot of time today on allowing people to define what they want to be called, defining their beliefs, recognizing their groups as they want to be recognized, using language that groups like and feel is appropriate. So, you know, this word is being thrown around, and no one's asked if some of us want to be addressed that way. I mean, I certainly don't.
Yeah, that's exactly the point. I think that I've talked to people on both sides of the debate, and that word just, it seems, I have to admit, it seems almost calculated to cause upset. But, you know, when you listen to people, when you sit down, there's a massive difference between the internet and sitting down with people. And if you actually sit down with people on both sides of the debate, you realize that there are causes of concern, there's causes of grievance, and there's discussions that people are willing to have and compromises they're willing to make. But it's really strange how this becomes something that's so totally different once it's online.
I agree. I think that most of the people that I have disagreed with over the years, when I meet them in public and I sit down and I talk to them, the disagreements sort of disappear to some degree. I mean, we do have things in common, and we do have things that we can talk about and we can share, and we have a way that we can approach each other, and it's not adversarial, but we don't have those type of conversations enough. You know, what we do is we go to our keyboards and we read something and it upsets us, so we start writing immediately, and there's no filter, there's nothing in between, and it doesn't always help the situation. I also think there's sort of a circular logic or a circular flow to a lot of blogs. I've been called out by other bloggers before. Last year at Pantheacon, I said something to the extent of, I'm not sure how many people really read blogs, and I'm not sure how important they really are in the larger scheme of things sometimes. Because if you read, you know, the 20 or so most popular pagan blogs, you see a lot of the same commentators over and over and over and over again. And they're just having the same argument on everybody's blog. That doesn't help.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. There are maybe too small a pool of names a lot of times. And even you could even argue too small a pool of backgrounds or paths, and maybe that's part of the whole problem with the process. I know, like, once a month here, we have a discussion group at the OWL, and we always strive to get people of all different spiritual and religious paths, and even that, we can make huge strides in sometimes in our own worldview and how we approach each other, where if you get in too small a circle, you get that closed circle going and you're in trouble.
And when I look at the pagan blogosphere, though, I see a wide range of voices. I think of all the different writers who have an audience. You know, there are Wiccan writers, but there are lots of Druid writers. There are Asatru writers. There's a little bit of everything. I don't think that Wiccan writers necessarily dominate the sort of general pagan scene. I mean, I'm a Wiccan, but I don't even think that my writing necessarily always reflects that. might be the history of a god or the history of a holiday. Today I wrote about the blues and Robert Johnson and hoodoo. I mean, that has nothing to do with being a Wiccan. It's just a little corner of history that I feel is interesting.
Well, that's true, but I'm not necessarily arguing that the there's a lack of diversity there. I guess my argument is or I'm in agreement with something you said earlier. At least I think that you said that there might be too few voices that are the loudest, maybe, or the ones that you see the most often. That might be the argument.
I think there are some names that come up more than others. I mean, it's really hard to blog and attract an audience. I think it's a really difficult thing. I think there are probably thousands of blogs and maybe 50 or 70 bloggers who are read on a pretty regular basis. I mean, the numbers for blogs are still pretty small. We're still kind of in the infancy of it all. And so, yeah, you do see a lot of the same names come up time and time again. But when I do see those same names come up a lot, I do think that they do represent generally some pretty diverse views. I know that my favorite bloggers are, you know, I have a druid who's a favorite blogger, a girl who is a trainee in the fairy tradition out in Oregon, and she's also does some Hindu work on the side. So there's all kinds of different things.
Interesting. So while I'm staying on the topic of controversial blogs here, what would you say your most controversial blog post was?
Oh, man. That's a hard one. I think the controversy that I enjoyed writing about and being in, and I think last year it probably had the most page views and stuff, was when we were when the Christo-Pagan sort of argument came up. And that was about a year ago. Sam Webster, who is a very sharp guy, I got to talk to him at Pantheacon. He articulates his arguments extremely well. I just happened to disagree with him on one. He wrote something where he completely rejected the idea of Christo paganism. And, you know, he is very adamant in his views that, you know, no pagan should have Jesus as a part of what they do, and that it would ultimately be bad for paganism, just like he thinks that Jesus has been bad for society overall. And he makes his argument well. To me, though, I know people who are Christo pagans. I know people who use Jesus in rituals. It's not necessarily anything that I want to do at this point in my life, but I don't think that we can go through and say, well, this pantheon of gods is okay, and this pantheon of gods is not okay. If somebody wants to worship Jesus, you know, along with his mom and maybe his dad to some lesser extent and call the angels at the four quarters, I think that's their business. And, you know, as long as they don't try to impose that on everybody else, I think it's possible to see Jesus as just one of many thousands of different gods. So that argument was interesting.
That'd be very hard.
Attractive.
Because you'd have to automatically eliminate a lot of different paths that might fall under, like, African diaspora religions. What are you going to do, ban those from the different conventions and festivals and such? I mean, it depends on – you have to be really careful when you put a hard line down like that, don't you? That'd be my argument.
Yes, and I think hard lines are dangerous. And also, if you look at the history of Jesus or any other god, there are varying takes on those gods. If you were agnostic, you worshipped Jesus as one of many different deities. The Gnostic world was full of gods and goddesses. So there are lots of different interpretations of Jesus. I think now, and I thought then, that if someone wants to worship a kinder, gentler sort of version of Jesus, that's only going to be beneficial in the long run, because maybe that kind of Jesus will be the one that rises to, you know, a dominant position again.
Sure.
But that was a really good argument for about a month. I remember reading lots of comments about that one. The Wiccan at Privilege has been one that's attracted a lot of comments. And there was one, too, and I have really conflicting feelings about it. Even now, I think it's about a year and a half later. There are a lot of people who formerly used the word pagan who now no longer want to be identified with the word pagan. And sometimes I think that's difficult, especially if someone is writing for a pagan blog, you know, basically interacting with people who are pagans all the time, going to pagan festivals. To run from that word is very difficult.
That is, I can see where that would be. Yeah, there's a lot of conflicts that could come up with that. That's very problematic, isn't it?
It is. But lately I've tried harder to stay out of the argument, just because I'm not sure that they necessarily do anything that's good for us long term. And a lot of times other people can write about these things much more eloquently than I can.
Well, I want to take a real quick second to remind everybody that they're listening to Pagan Spirit Shamanic Life on Blog Talk Radio, Body Mind Spirit Radio. And if they want to interact with Jason, give a call in at 877-497-2931 and talk to the call screener. Now, if you don't mind, Jason, I would like to switch topics a little bit. I have a particular surprise for you, one that I didn't forewarn you about, but I have a game in mind because I know you are a sports fan. You are a follower of many sports teams, yes. And I thought, here's a great opportunity because I've got you on here. You are well-known, have a lot of in-depth thoughts about this, and there's going to be a lot of people listening to this that are starting their pagan or Wiccan path. So by drawing some names out of a hat, I have created for us a Sweet 16 bracket of pagan authors.
All right.
So I don't care what your criteria is, although I think it'd be interesting maybe on some of these to decide what the criteria is when a couple of these names come up. But you can decide that you like the cover photo better, or you can decide it's just your favorite book, you've read it more times than the other, or whatever. I'm leaving the criteria up to you, but you want to run through a Sweet 16 bracket with me real quick?
I think it'd be fun.
All right. We're starting with a hard one here. The random slips of paper that I pulled were not very easy on some of these. So we're starting with a very difficult bracket. We have got Gardner versus Bonwitz to start off with.
Wow. To me, as an initiated Gardnerian, it's an easy choice. It has to be Gardner. Now, if I was going to pick someone to read, I would pick Isaac any day. Isaac was a much better writer than Gerald, but I am of the opinion that Gerald Gardner is the most influential modern pagan of the last 200 years, and that without Gerald Gardner, modern paganism would probably still exist, but it would be much smaller and it would look very, very different.
Yeah, I can agree with that. That's a valid argument. Next bracket, then, we'll move down to Z Budapest versus Christian Day.
Wow. Whoa.
Put you on the spot, right?
Wow. That is a tough one. Christian Day has a reputation of either extreme love or extreme hate.
Yeah,
I know.
People
either
love him or
hate him. Yep, I've met people on both sides of the aisle. Of course, Z Budapest is the same way. There are feelings both ways. I think when it comes to influence in the long term of things, Z Budapest wins by, you know, at least a length. You know, she has changed so many lives. She's changed the lives of so many women. And she went to one of my rituals once. So she wins by default there.
Hey, that's pretty neat, isn't it?
I found out year later after the fact, but I thought it was pretty cool.
Even finding out a year after the day, that's pretty awesome. That's no small accomplishment. So the next bracket puts us in the Battle of the Ravens. We've got Raven Grimassi versus Silver Ravenwolf.
Wow. I've met them both. Raven and his partner Stephanie are both extremely nice people.
Oh, they're great.
I've read some of his books. I've read some of his books. He's a good writer. I don't necessarily always agree with what he writes, but he's a talented writer. Silver Ravenwolf has an extremely bad reputation to a lot of pagans, but I still believe that To Ride the Silver Broomstick is a very good book, and it came along at just the right period of time. It introduced a lot of people to witchcraft. There's a reason it has sold over 100,000 copies. Silver Ravenwolf, love her or hate her, is a very talented writer. So I'm going to go with Silver Ravenwolf.
I can definitely agree with that, and especially the pivotal moment thing. I think when people started to bag on her a little bit was the whole teen sensation stuff that came on later. But Ride a Silver Broomstick, you're right. It was just that right moment where it made a big splash, and that makes it very important, doesn't it?
It was a really practical sort of book about magic, especially. And I used a lot of spells from that book for years. And it was probably almost my witch bible for a good solid year and a half. There was just a lot of really good information in there. She got so popular so fast, though, I think there was quite the backlash. And Teen Witch and Teen Witch Kit were the final straw for a lot of people.
Yeah, you're right about that. It was that surge of popularity, especially in our strong-willed little subset of religious community, can sometimes turn people against you rapidly, can't it? So,
I think it can, and, you know, she kind of burst on the scene from nowhere. It's not like, you know, she'd been going to festivals for years or anything like that. She just came out with this book, and it really captured interest, and it captured the imagination of people. And I think instantly she was, like, Llewellyn's number one living author in the witchcraft community, and I think there was some resentment. And her books also sort of lack a lot of spirituality in places. And I think after people got through reading Broomstick, they were looking for a little bit more, and it wasn't there. So they kind of turned on her to some degree.
Good point.
I think she gets a bad rap.
So with next bracket, we're looking at Chris Penzack versus T. Thorne Coyle.
Again? They're both lovely people. T is a Thorn. I really can't call her T. Thorn is, you know, a Bay Area neighbor, so to speak. I've been to one of her rituals before. She's an amazing ritualist. If you ever get a chance to go to a T. Thorne Coyle ritual, I highly recommend it. She's a great workshop teacher, too. Christopher is the nicest famous pagan I've ever met in my life. I love that guy. I adore that guy. His books are also really good. His workshops are great. His rituals are also really great. I think what Christopher does is probably closer to what I do, so I'm going to give Christopher a slight nod. Give him a slight edge because of that. What's that?
Hopefully that doesn't get you in trouble with the neighbors, right?
Nah, I think we'll be fine.
All right, so next bracket puts us with Janet and Stuart Farrar versus Edaine McCoy.
Oh, Edaine McCoy might be a very nice person, but a lot of her books are terrible. She did write Witta, I think, in Irish pagan tradition, and that's almost unforgivable. If you were to ask me what the most influential book of ritual I've ever read is, it's Eight Sabbaths for Witches by Janet and Stuart Farrar, also known as a Witch's Bible. So Janet and Stuart win by a large, large margin there.
All right. Next bracket puts us with Starhawk versus Oberon Zell Ravenheart.
Oh, my God. I love both of them so much. Oberon totally deserves to be, like, in the Elite Eight. And over some of these people we have there.
It was a tough first bracket.
I think Starhawk is the most influential living witch on the planet. I think she's the third most influential person in the history of modern paganism. She is the most talented writer we've ever had write a book about paganism, about Wicca, or witchcraft especially. She also infused her witchcraft with politics, this concern for the environment that was absent kind of from the things that Gerald Gardner might have written. She changed the game entirely. That's not to say that Oberon did not change the game entirely. You know, Oberon was somebody who first started using the word pagan to talk about these large groups of different people who believe sort of similar things. The Green Egg is, well, the Green Egg was our internet in the 70s, a hugely important magazine, and then it was again in the 90s. Oberon is one of the nicest guys I've ever met. He's really great. But Starhawk just beats him out, and not very many people would beat out Oberon Zell. The Church of All Worlds, what a great group. And Morning Glory, his partner for coining the word polyamory and bringing kind of that lifestyle into the pagan community, and I know many people who have embraced it and do it in a healthy, great way. Oh, man, you're killing me.
Huge impact on both sides of that bracket. So the next one we're going up to is Margot Adler versus the Frost.
Oh, Margot. Margot by huge margin.
I kind of agree with you there. I didn't think there was going to be much controversy on that one. But that does in some ways, maybe the toughest bracket in some ways for the last one. We're looking at Uncle Bucky, Buckland, versus Scott Cunningham.
Wow, that is tough. That is really rough. Wow. Well, Buckland brought gardenering crafts to the United States, and Buckland was the first person to write sort of a do-it-yourself Wicca book with the tree. Scott Cunningham, though, was the first person to really write, you know, a book for Wicca for anybody and write about it in a completely legitimate way. That, you know, if you want to be a Wiccan, you can do these steps in your house, and you can worship, and you can use this ritual system regardless of an initiation or whatever else. So they're both extremely influential people. I know that Wicca, A Guide for the Solitary Practitioner, is one of maybe the five best-selling Wicca books of all time. Bucky's Big Blue Book has also sold a lot of copies. I don't think it's sold nearly as many as Wicca by Cunningham. Wow. Can I flip a coin? Is that fair? Or do I have to use reason?
You don't have to use reason. You can use any means you want.
I think because Buckland outlived Scott and is still alive, and he also influenced the community in the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, 90s, and beyond, I think I'm going to go with Uncle Bucky for that one particular reason. I reread Wicca the other day, and it was originally published in 1989. It doesn't hold up nearly as well as I thought it probably would, though, because there have been so many more Wicca 101 books that have kind of come out over the years. Though it would have been interesting to see how he would have probably updated it in 1999 or 2009,
whatever. It's a tough one because tough just on the circumstance that Scott is so beloved by so many people. I mean, there's almost a first crush sort of reaction when you're talking about a Cunningham book. You know what I mean?
There is, especially for a particular generation. There's a first love, and there's something about Buckland that seems remote to a lot of people. You know, Uncle Bucky's Big Blue Book, you know, almost feels like a school class instead of something about religion, you know. And I've met Buckland before, and he's a charming, wonderful, sweet guy. But in prose, he comes across as a little bit stiff.
Exactly. So we'll go back now. We're revisiting here. So heading back to the first sets of brackets, we now have the Gardeners versus Z Budapest as our in the 8th tier.
There would be no Z Budapest-style witchcraft without Gerald Gardner. So it's Gerald Gardner.
All right. So that puts Silver Ravenwolf versus Mr. Christopher Penzack.
Whoa. That's a tough one to think about. You know, Christopher has been so prolific over the last couple of years with books. He's traveled to so many festivals, and his church is really, I don't want to really call it a church, but his tradition is really up and running and in various places across the country and has been very visible and high profile. So because of that, and Silver feels like she's sort of in semi-retirement, I'm going to go with Christopher.
Right. All right. So now we're looking at Starhawk versus the Farrars.
For me personally, it would be Janet and Stuart Farrar. But to look at Pagandom as a whole, it's most certainly Starhawk.
So then that would put us with Margot versus Mr. Buckland.
Wow. I'm gonna give this to Margot, even though Margot has written quite a bit less than Buckland. I mean, Margot really only has 3 books in print. I mean, the shadow that Drawing Down the Moon casts is very large. It's a great book because it was the first attempt to document modern paganism in any sort of journalistic or scholarly fashion. It was really ahead of its time. We still use that book. Those of us who are giant pagan history nerds, we still use that book because the history in it is so good, and Margot unearthed so many things, and she talked to so many different people. And Margot is still out, and she still does a lot of pagan festivals and things. A couple of years ago, I was at Sirius Rising, which is at Brushwood in western New York. Nearby is a campsite called Lilydale, which is a spiritualist community. Margot Adler was at Sirius Rising. Ray Buckland was at the spiritualist community. That says a lot right there, so I'm going to go with Margot Adler.
All right. Yeah, Margot, I had her on the show here 2 months ago, I think it was, and we also interacted at the Michigan Pagan Fest this last year, and she is just a boundless bundle of energy. It's really amazing.
She's so sharp. She's just great to listen to. Last year at Sirius Rising, they were doing a panel on the history of paganism, or like where we're going in the future, and everything that Margot said was, you just wanted to write it down and quote it to everybody you knew, because she really is, she's just on her game all the time.
And the book she just came out with on vampires is really interesting as well. If you haven't had a chance yet, you should check that one out.
Okay. I'll have to get to it. Maybe I might save it for October. I always think of vampires in October.
Oh, there you go. All right, so now we're down to the final four, Gardner versus Christopher Penzack.
Oh, Christopher Penzack wouldn't exist without Gerald Gardner. So you can always go back to that. So,
all right.
I'm going to go with Gerald. I think Christopher would agree.
Margot versus Starhawk. The power of the
feminine over here. Because Starhawk has written more, and I think Margot documented paganism. Starhawk infused paganism with new things and new elements and made witchcraft kind of a feminist religion, which I don't think it really had been in Great Britain. So it's definitely Starhawk.
Excellent. So that puts us at our final battle here, Gardner versus Starhawk.
You know, this is a really interesting question. Right now I'm going to go with Gardner because, you know, I'm an initiated Gardnerian, and I think he was really sort of the one who started everything. He's sort of the nexus. But it'll be really interesting in 100 years or 200 years if that changes. Especially because of everything that Starhawk has brought into modern paganism. You know, it's like you have, in Christianity, you have Jesus and you have Paul. You know, Jesus obviously is sort of the founder of Christianity, but it wouldn't exist without Paul. So,
right.
Starhawk's kind of the same way. You know, she's obviously a much better writer than Gerald Gardner. Gerald's influence on modern paganism, 10 years, you know, he wrote a book. He wrote another book. He started covens. He initiated people. And then he died. 10 years, a decade, is really all that we got of Gerald as a public witch.
Wow.
I mean, and then Starhawk has been a public witch for almost 40 years. She's had a lot of time to sort of put her stamp on our community.
Wow. Well, that's, yeah, great perspective on that, too. An interesting analogy using the Jesus and Paul analogy. I agree with you. But, you know, I really appreciate you doing that with me because it was my thought process that there's really important names out there. And this was a fun way of giving people that maybe haven't been exposed to some of those names reasonings, things that make those names interesting. So now they can go check out those books and research that history. So appreciate you playing that game with me. That was kind of fun.
It was fun, though I think that the person that was, I think, most left out was probably Doreen Valiente, the writer of Charge of the Goddess.
She was on the slips of paper along with a few other people that didn't make it out of the randomizer.
Who were the other names on the other slips of paper?
Let me see. Doreen was in there. It was last week that I did this. Who else was in there? Now my mind is completely blanking on me. Now that you ask me. I think we had Amber Kay was in there. Who else was in there? Now I'm completely blanking on most of them, but
it's all right. I was putting you on the spot.
Well, I did the same to you, so it's fair. Some people would look on that as karma, but
it all evens out, you know.
Well, while I got you for a few more minutes, we've talked a little bit about those books. Is there anything that that you could tell us about? Advice that you might want to give about people who are just beginning their pagan path as well? Because I remember you and I, like I said, it's been a while now. I think I've got the age on you slightly, but not by a heck of a lot. And, you know, so we've been doing this for a while, so it's kind of hard to remember sometimes. And you were just starting a group out there in California recently, as you said. What kind of advice, what kind of things should people look for? What do you think someone who's just coming to this path, what direction would you like to steer them, if you could?
Wow, that's a good question. I think that reading is important. I think that reading things beyond our computer screens is really important. But even more important than reading is doing. I think people get lost in reading Wicca 101 books sometimes. And what's really important is doing the witchcraft, is doing the rituals, is trying to worship and trying to practice. And, you know, sometimes it seems like that kind of gets forgotten. We're, you know, thinking about all these things and arguing about theology. And what we need to be doing is doing pagan things all the time. You know, go outside, go on a walk, and look around you. Don't do it in Michigan maybe this year, but most of the time in other places.
At least not today.
You know, go around and look outside and listen while you're out there. You know, see if there are messages from the gods. You know, see if the Horned One is maybe whispering to you in the trees or the shrubs or the bushes. You know, look at the moon and see if the goddess is up there. I know that for me, I went a few years without really meeting another pagan. You know, I got into this and I was a solitary person for a few years when I lived in Missouri. And then I moved to Michigan, and I found a lot of other pagans at Michigan State. And we didn't find sort of adult pagans. It was just us. We were all in our teens or early 20s, and we wrote rituals, and we did rituals. And it was this great sort of boot camp for figuring everything out. I mean, we presented rituals in public when we had no business doing so, so we had to learn to write ritual. And at this, you know, looking back on it almost 20 years later, it's almost like what a bunch of arrogant assholes to try to do such things. But I look at the people that were a part of those circles, and they've gone on to do great things. They're leading druid groups. They're third-degree high priestesses in traditions. So it obviously was helpful. So I think doing is important. You know, try to find groups, get involved, and if you can't find a group or you can't find a group that practices, start trying to do your own thing.
Yeah, I agree. That's really good advice. And, you know, your thought about not having any business leading rituals, actually, I've told a couple different people. Andrea Vitamus is one, and Sean Ara Knight is another one. That what we really need is a web series, a series of YouTube videos where two people sit down in a pub and talk about ritual disasters. It'd be like Inside the Actor's Studio, only with rituals gone wrong stories.
There are probably hours worth of stories there waiting to be told. I think writing ritual is one of the hardest things to do in modern paganism. To write a public, especially a public ritual that involves everyone in the circle in some ways and is meaningful, is just nearly impossible for a lot of people to do. Ritual has to be more than just handing someone a flower and meditating on the seasons. To me, ritual, especially pagan ritual, is about connecting with something greater than ourselves. I've seen wonderfully staged rituals in my life where, you know, people were on their cues and, you know, recited every word absolutely perfectly, but there was no heart there to it. We weren't connecting with anything greater. So it kind of left you feeling empty.
Yeah,
I know Sean has talked
a
lot about ritual, does a lot with that.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, too. And I think that's important, you know, if this was advice for the new person, that even goes for the solitary practice, because you're going to sit down with a book and you're going to try to do exactly what was in the book, and you're going to mess something up. You didn't do something long enough, or you forgot a certain color candle, or something wasn't exactly like it was in the book. And it's important for people to know it's not that kind of a script. It's all about making those connections, I think.
To me, that's always been the thing. You know, if everybody is connected in some way to what's going on, then the ritual has been successful. Though I do think, you know, I had a friend call me an Episcopagan the other day, and I really like that term. Because one of the things that I like to do with rituals with my coven is, you know, the beginning of the ritual is always the same, and the end of the ritual is always the same. The middle, you know, sort of the meat of the ritual changes, of course, from Espet to Sabbat and whatever else. But I think that if you repeat the same sort of things enough times, it gets you into this ritual position in your mind. I think it's helpful.
Right.
And I didn't used to think that way, but doing the same quarter calls often with the same group of people, I think, can just get you in tune with ritual almost immediately.
Yeah, at that point in time, it almost becomes like sigil work or a certain scent or something like that where it can instantly get you in that space, right?
It's a trigger. Exactly. It's a trigger, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like somebody says this word, and we make this sign, and we do this thing, and boom, I know exactly what we're doing. I'm in ritual mode. I've stopped the giggling. I'm now focused on what it is that we're doing. For my group,
we
open up with a chant. That usually gets everybody on the same page instantly.
Gets the blood flowing, right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight. I've got about 90 seconds left. Why don't you go ahead and give a real quick plug where people can find you online?
There are only 4 Jason Mankeys in the entire country, and I come up first. I write Raise the Horns is the name of the blog. It's at Papios Pagan, and I do write a lot. I go to a lot of festivals, too. This summer, I'm probably going to go out east at least once, probably for Sirius Rising at Brushwood Nature Center.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. This has been a lot of fun, and to the audience out there listening, I want to remind you that the next show coming up here on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio is Journeys into Wellness, which will be tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it, and blessed be.